A Podcast One production.
I'm Sammy Lucas, and I'm romantically challenged. I've consciously removed myself from dating altogether on several occasions because I just run out of energy to deal with yet another disappointment. We've all been there, haven't we? My guest, Wendy, finds herself in this exact position after one too many heartbreaks and overwhelming self-doubt in her 50s. So she chats to me about how she's decided she will not get back into the game until she's emotionally ready. And when she does, she's hoping her new strategy to avoid getting intimate too quickly will help her find everlasting love. Oh, and she's got a really interesting explanation for why online dating will never bring you more success than meeting someone IRL. That's in real life, kids. Here's Wendy.
Hi, my name's Wendy, and I'm a woman in my early 50s. I enjoy laughing with friends and family, talking about stuff that matters, dancing, and walking on the beach, whether it's sunny or raining. I've worked in journalism and PR on and off for ages, and I've taken big breaks to raise my kids. I've had two long relationships. The first one was with the father of my three oldest boys, and the second with the father of my now 8-year-old. And I've been single for 4 years. My ideal partner, he'd be clever and kind and solvent. Dating in my 50s is a chore, and that's a mindset I've got to change. For me, dating is either having fun or trying to find a connection. And hopefully one day soon, I'll find my next Mr. Right.
Wendy, thanks for joining me.
Sammy, it's really lovely to be here.
It's weird to be on the other side of the microphone for a change. You're used to asking the questions, right?
It's a bit like being in the passenger seat and you're always looking for the brake. So it's going to be fun, but just you have to be patient and kind with me.
Oh, stop it. We were talking while we were setting everything up. And I said, we have to stop talking because honestly, it's like wind us up and we cannot stop. I want to know about this situation, though. You're fatigued by dating.
Mm-hmm.
What led to this?
I think I don't really want to date. I want to be in a relationship. And I kind of want to cut to the chase and sort of just wake up one day with some lovely man that I want to spend the rest of my life with without having to go through kissing so many frogs.
That's what I say. It's like, I just want him to drop out of the sky onto the pavement in front of me. It'd be nice. And go, here I am.
I know. And, you know, he's done his work. That's why I say he's doing all his work to make himself a great guy, and he just arrives and it's sort of done. And I thought I had that, but unfortunately I didn't. So I'm back in the situation of needing to actually put myself back out there. And I'm kind of reticent, which is new for me because I've always been kind of brave at taking on the next challenge.
We spoke to someone on a recent podcast who said the advice she was given is that men need to take a minimum of 6 years after a divorce or a long relationship ends to get their shit together. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that? And have you kind of taken the time for you, or are you currently doing the work on you in this kind of dating break?
That's an interesting finding. I've been in two long-term relationships and both repartnered pretty much instantly. And those relationships have lasted. So good for
that. They have. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And for me, I didn't take that time between my first and second long-term relationships. It was 3 years. And it was definitely a rebound relationship of two people who weren't suited. So it ran its course. But I've been single for 4 years and I've done a lot of work on myself. You know, I've seen a psychologist, but more than that, I've actually sort of gone down to tin tacks and looking at the pattern repeats that I've done in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I went into the last relationship I had thinking that I've done the hard yards and I'm ready to go. I was dated a guy who his marriage ended 11 years ago and who was on really good terms with his ex-wife. So I thought it's all good to go. But alas, it wasn't. So I'm back here now.
It's an interesting point that you've made me think of for the first time, and we've been recording this podcast for, you know, almost 2 years now, and I've never thought of this until now. it's the reason I think so many of us do get fatigued by dating and we take the break from dating, because we think dating in our 50s or 40s or 60s is going to be the same as dating in your teens or 20s or 30s when you're full of hope and optimism and positivity. And at this age, like, you've been through so much and you've dealt with so much. And I think that's why a lot of us, one, get fatigued, and two, actually do need to go and speak to a therapist and process what we've been through and what comes next, do you think?
Look, I think there's also a vulnerability about aging as well.
Yes.
You know, the idea is I'm not as attractive as I used to be, no matter how much time I take to get out of the house. And it, unfortunately, it's a looks-based culture. And so there's that element. I probably have a higher sense of concern about being rejected because of how I look, simply because I'm older.
Really?
I think what happens is that whole internal dialogue of low self-regard is something that we really have to stop, because you just kind of kill yourself before you even leave the house. And so that's something that I'm aware of. But dating in my 50s, I think I'm tired because one of the reasons is I think the range of people who I probably can partner with is getting narrower. So I know that the chances of a lucky hit are kind of less.
Well, you could look at it that way, or you could look at it that there will be more people getting divorced. So
you're
it actually opens
Sammy.
Up. I mean, really, I used to say to my parents in my, I think it was about my early 30s, when they were like, okay, when you're getting married. And I said, you know what? I'm actually now waiting for second round offers. Like,
yeah.
All my friends have been married. I think all the good guys are gone. I'm just going to have to wait for them to run their course. Now I'm like, I'm on third round offers, I think.
No, I don't know about that. I think you don't be too hard on yourself.
Well, you've been married once, right?
For been married once.
How long was that?
That relationship was 15 years.
15 years.
And the second one was 6 years.
Yeah, they had two really long relationships. Do you feel the need to get married again?
You know, I don't want to live with another person ever again. I have zero desire to wash someone's underpants or discuss plumbing. I don't care. That stuff is the detritus of life. I have no interest in sharing that crap with anyone else. But marriage, you know, there's something about me, unfortunately, that has, there's an aromantic side that is illogical. But I was raised on Milton Boone books by my mother, so it's her fault.
Really?
So there's this whole kind of, it's not being rescued, but there's still this idea of one other who sees you and you see them, and it's kind of like a unity thing. So unfortunately, I still have that for some reason.
Oh, 2 points I've got to unpack here.
Sorry.
Number one, you would get married, but you wouldn't live with that person. Right. That's sort of, we're hearing a little bit of that now. I've heard of a lot of my friends are saying, I'll never live with a guy again, but they don't want to get married. But that's the first time I've actually heard, I want to get married, but I don't want to live with him.
Look, you know what? This is pure supposition.
Very avant-garde.
Oh, you know, maybe that idea of a duplex. I mean, Darren Hinch did it. So the idea is that, you know, you have apartments in the same building. So you don't spend all of your time with them, because we've put so much time into developing our friendships and our time with people. That the problem is like, one of my really good friends separated from her husband, and we saw each other a lot, and then she repartnered, and now the only time I see her is with her new partner.
Mm-hmm.
And that's...
But there are some people that have that personality. We've all got them, the girlfriends that just always have to be matched, always have to be with someone. I still have to go back to the not living together thing. So... If you're not living together, even if you're in the same apartment building, right, and you're on different floors, what's the point of being married?
It's choosing a life partner. And I think...
That you don't want to be around.
Well, no, you have to realise I've got the kids. And I don't... The way that I am with my children is a different Wendy to the Wendy that I want to be with my partner. I mean, I want to be feminine and talk about books and nice, romantic kind of... things that are more specifically about me. Well, parenting is kind of a generic task. It's screaming at people. It's making sure the lunchbox is made. It's keeping them safe. And I don't really want them to bleed together. And so I don't really want to have someone in my house, firstly, to think that they have a right to comment on my parenting.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, to actually see the Harridan, which isn't my home, which is me.
The other thing I wanted to mention is, you said this, you're looking for this kind of unity. It's like I reject this notion that there's someone out there who will complete me because I'm a complete person on my own. Mm. But are you saying it's that Tom Cruise, is it? Was it in Top Gun? What movie was it in when he's, oh, you complete me?
It was the one with Renee Zellweger.
Yeah, Renee Zellweger. Jerry Maguire. Yeah. So thank you, Jen.
You had me at hello.
Oh, you had me at hello. See, all that bullshit just took us down the wrong path, didn't it? But so yeah. I really feel like if I don't ever meet another person, my life is going to be amazing and I'm going to enjoy it till the day I die on my own. But are you saying that horrifies you? Like you
no,
feel
not
like
at
you
all.
Need to share it with someone else?
I'd like to, but I've got a pretty good life and I'm doing things in my life now to make it even better and I'm proud of that. It would be nice to share it with another, but if it doesn't happen, meh. But the bit that's missing there is the intimacy.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, I'd like intimacy to me is sex plus also a capacity to laugh at the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. Intimacy, sex is only a very small part of intimacy.
Yeah.
Intimacy is sharing your, you know, deepest fears and...
that's not even necessary though.
Not with the person, your life partner? You don't share everything with them?
Well...
Isn't that part of like that closeness and connection with someone? The person that if I was ever to go down the marriage route, which I probably wouldn't, but even just that life partner, it's the person that knows everything about me, that there are no secrets, I share everything and he loves me, good, bad, otherwise.
Not necessarily.
See, you've been married before.
Yeah, I think you have to be careful about power. Every relationship is about power. And if you give up all of you to another, you just have to be, you know, it's like that French films really, isn't it? It's a good idea to have an element of mystique and unknown. And to be honest, if you weren't in relationship with that person, you'd be perfectly fine, you know, with your friendships or within yourself at finding that strength. I think sharing all of your fragilities, I think a partner isn't a psychologist.
No, but they don't need to be. They just need to be able to listen. And I think it's having that person who knows you, who knows everything about you, mm-hmm. that person that I wanted to share my life with, that would be the foundation of that relationship.
Okay. Me, maybe not so much.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was, I keep on harking back, but I was dating a functional person, which was quite fun.
What do you mean a functional person?
Someone who had done a lot of work on himself and was a nice person and just someone who I thought was really, really a good man.
You mean a fully functioning adult person?
Probably about 80%, which is pretty
exist.
Good. And I deliberately didn't tell him a lot about my life because I didn't want to sully it. I didn't want to, because this stuff is hard. And so I didn't want to, I saw our relationship as the light, you know, it was like the icing on the cake. And I didn't want to bring this other stuff into it. And I think what happens though is that kind of knowledge can occur at a pace. I think it's about timing it because obviously you don't want to be with someone for a number of years and they still only know a percentage
of
you. But I think it's the idea is just slowing down the rate of exposure. And I think...
Interesting. Feels like to me you have a very romantic, like you're quite a romantic and you're looking for that romance. And is that kind of what dating is for you, is bringing that romantic energy into your world? It's kind of like escape from being a mum and working. And
I think you've pretty much hit it on the head.
So you like the whole getting dressed up, yep. The anticipation of going on a date.
But also being seen, to be seen as a woman.
But it makes you feel feminine. It makes you feel womanly.
I can get all dressed up and walk downstairs and feel beautiful and my kids go, what's for dinner? And I think, oh, okay. But when I go out and I see a man look at me in an appreciative way or it's flirtation, it's being seen in a way which isn't so pedestrian.
That sounds beautiful, but then I wonder if that you put high expectations on every date you go on then.
No.
Or do you go into a date with high expectations? Because I go in with the lowest expectation.
Yeah.
I think hopefully it's going to be better than shit.
Yeah, look, no, I don't go into dates with high expectations. I think you want to get a sense of is there any chance, is there any reason to see each other again? Mm-hmm. I think that's the thing. And often there's just no gel, you know. You look at each other and they assess, there's the whole kind of tick box thing and you think, oh, really?
But dating is really just spending time with someone to work out if you want to spend more time with them.
Yeah.
And then you keep spending time with them until they annoy you or they say or do something that you don't agree with or you find out something about them and you go, ah, I want to spend more time with
or
them.
Or the other side of the story is you might like them and keep on going out with them, perhaps.
I'm interested, you mentioned a little while ago this idea of power, every relationship. What did you say? It's a power struggle?
I think there's a power balance in relationships, in any relationship.
That sounds negative to me. Like, I wouldn't want to think that a relationship is about a power battle. I want a relationship to be about equality.
Good.
I don't want to be in a competition with the guy. I think maybe because I've had that. I've had that with boyfriends before who feel like they have to compete with me. And
I don't mean competition. It's not the kind of thing. It's not like who's the most successful or trying to outstrip each other.
So what's the power?
I think I'm looking at it from my experience that I've often felt powerless.
Oh.
And then I realized that I have given my power over to my partner. And often when you give up your job or career, as I did, to have children, that removes so much of your economic power, your self-confidence, all of those things. So I look at power exists in relationships, I think, and I've looked at like intimacy in relationships, and I think that I'm looking at how I can retain power longer in a relationship, because I don't want to go through grief anymore, which a lot of my romantic experiences have been quite, someone's end up hurt and I want to reduce that.
It's a risk we all take, isn't it?
Yeah, but I've done it a few times. I think I've learned enough to hopefully to give it I'll try it differently next time.
I really like the way you explained that situation of getting married and giving up your power to have children, and it's like you're handing over the power,
I think it all depends.
Because I never went through that. I never had that.
No, and the thing is it all depends on who you partner with. I've seen a lot of really respectful men whose wives have done the same thing that I did, but there is an appreciation of their role more than I had.
But it's also not even about the way the man is. It's just in yourself, if you've always worked, and I've seen this with quite a few girlfriends, and they get married and they give up their career to, you know, raise the children and run the household, and they lose, I guess, in your words, their power in that way. And psychologically, like that I've not been through that. So you've given me a new appreciation of understanding what women go through in that situation.
Well, I'd never recommend to a woman to ever give up her career to have children. And that's who looks after the kids. I don't know. I think there's a change in men, in their willingness to participate in home duties. And hopefully that'll increase. So, yeah, I just think, I mean, we know now women my age are the women who are most likely to be homeless because of those decisions.
Yeah. So how are you going to maintain the power moving forward? What's your plan?
I have a strategy, which probably will fall over at the second tequila.
What's the strategy?
So I've looked at what I've done and where I've ended up and thinking, okay, it's now time to actually be a little less emotive and actually apply a little bit of rational thought, a bit of conscious brain to relationships. And so I'm going, okay, so the first thing with this is intimacy. I mean, for me, if I meet someone I like, which is what happened last time, I had was intimate with them on the second relationship. And now it's definitely going to be at
least... Second relationship? You mean second date?
Yeah, sorry.
What do you mean? As in you had sex?
I had sex, thank you. Right. Yeah, that's what I meant. the last man I dated, the first date, I basically snogged him because why not? And then the second date, we had sex. And I thought, you know, he's an older guy. He's obviously not Tinder savvy. He was kind of a bit of a greenhorn out there. Lovely man. So we had sex. But then, and he thought I was the bee's knees, which was amazing and it was all lovely. But then it quite quickly turned that I cared for him more. So I'm going to withhold, not because of any puritanical reasons, but simply to just try it a different way and see what eventuates.
So you're going to withhold sex?
It sounds
to feel.
To me, it's withholding sex.
What, so that
I like
you
sex.
Can get a sense of whether he's really into you before you actually have sex
no,
with him?
No, I don't
him.
Actually think, I don't think it's anything to do with his conscious thought either. I think it's just maybe try to slow it down. slow it down a bit and get to know each other better. Actually, assuming that you like each other, just slow it down, because otherwise it's kind of soup to nuts in 3 months. You know what I mean?
Soup to nuts?
From the beginning to the end.
Is that some sexual reference?
No, it's a saying in America, I think.
But, I've never heard it. That's
hilarious. From the, yeah, you're basically,
and entirely appropriate in this regard.
You're kind of, well, absolutely. Well, there you go. From soup to nuts.
Soup
absolutely.
To nuts on the first date.
On the first date. No, but so I think you just slow it down. If you're lucky enough to find someone that you want to have sex with and like, I'm just saying, just calm the farm, and I'm going to try to make it a little bit more get to know them, because that's how it used to be. Because now when we meet someone online, there's no pace, and what I want to do is actually instill my own pace, mm-hmm. which is not my natural instinct. So it's going to be interesting.
Well, see, I think, why would you fight your natural instinct? I guess it depends on the way you look at sex, mm-hmm. and you either look at sex as something that can define or solidify a relationship, you know, emotionally and for your own self-esteem and everything that you've just discussed, which is great, or you look at sex as just sex, which is a physical interaction between two people, which is kind of how I look at it. Like, if I have sex with you on the first date or the 10th date, it doesn't make any difference to me. And if you're the kind of guy that is going to have sex with me on the second date and then I never hear from you again, see ya. Not the man I want to be with.
Yeah, I'm not actually talking about sex though. I'm talking about intimacy and also slowing the pace of it down. I mean, look, I've got no issue with what you've just said, and thanks for offering me sex on the first date.
I might take you up on that.
But
see, okay, I'll give you this.
What you just said, I agree with completely. But for me, it's about withholding myself,
yeah,
I suppose.
Yeah.
And to me, like, you're sitting there with your legs played or whatever, you're not exactly withholding much, you know what I mean?
But I think
lying there.
From what I'm getting from you, it's more just about, you have been so burnt. You've given so much of yourself and fallen in love, and you've been so burnt that you just can't put yourself through that again. And do you know how many people identify with that?
Why make decisions which will make me feel shit? So I'm going to try
to... Sex could make you feel really, really good.
Sex, well, I'm going out tonight, it might happen, but...
with you.
So, yeah, I have no problems with finding someone and just letting it happen. But for me, that's a bit like pulling a scab off something. I can't... If you're going to awaken that beast, I can't do one-night stands, because it's like awakening a bear, and then the bear wants more food, so I don't...
Never had one night stands?
I've had one night stands when I was younger. But now, because it's either you're sexually active or you're not, for me. Because if I want to be sexually active, it's basic. That was my problem, is I loved this guy and everything was good. But now I've had to put all of that desire, I've had to repackage it back into that jack-in-the-box.
It goes away after a while, trust
well,
me.
Well, yeah, no, but the thing is that if I go out and have a one-night stand, it's basically reopening something, and then I'm going to have to put all that energy into putting it back.
So it's not about the physical at all, it's about the emotional.
Oh, look, sex is fantastic, but it's not like having it once is enough. It's addictive.
It's a fine line though, because I had the reverse situation where quite a few years ago I was dating a guy and he was fresh out of like a 10-year marriage, newly single. He, you know, it had been a horrible separation and quite traumatic. And we were dating and he wouldn't have sex with me. And it was like every week I'd go on another date and the girls would be like, have you had sex yet? And I'm like, no. He won't have sex with me. And this went on. And he was like, oh, I just want to be in the right place and I'm not ready emotionally. Do you know what? In the end, I gave up. I just said, and it made me feel shit because I thought, is he just not attracted to me?
It's
and as a woman, that's, you know, when you're dating someone, it's nice to think that they're attracted to you. And the fact that he refused to have sex with me for his own moral issues was his thing. But in the end, I just said,
the right call.
I'm bored.
Because he probably didn't have much of a libido.
Have you been online dating?
I've been online, on and off. Like, I met the father of my youngest child on RSVP all those years ago. And, how else do you meet people?
So you are online dating?
Yeah, I went back online with Tinder and Bumble, and I know there's like a million others, But they're the kind of two. I didn't want to go back on profile-based stuff like RSVP or eHarmony. I
just See, but the thing we have discovered in the podcast here and talking to people is the kind of relationship that it sounds like you're looking for. Tinder is not the place for you. RSVP or those, you know, the sites where you need to put a lot more effort into creating your profile are more likely people that are looking for something more meaningful. Whereas on Tinder, you're more likely to just get people that are just there to have sex.
I don't know. That hasn't been my experience. I've been on a couple of dates on Tinder and of three guys, yeah, one of them I'm still really good friends with. The second one was the chap I mentioned. And the third guy was a really nice banker type, couple of kids in Balmain. So I think it's a numbers game. Like on Tinder, there's a lot of people. I think. So it's just being a little bit more cautious on who you end up seeing on a date.
And also being really upfront mm-hmm. from the start about what you're looking for, because you might be matching with a lot of guys that are just on Tinder or Bumble or whatever to just have some sex and have some companionship.
Oh, people are upfront in Tinder about that, and that's fine, and it's not for me.
So do you put this in your profile or do you sort of say it on a
I keep
first
on deleting
date?
My account and then putting it back on.
So I'm not
Does it everybody? Oh. But you never delete the account, you just delete the app and turn it off.
That's the trick, so you have to go through the whole
thing
again.
Your photos again.
I just want to quickly ask you, you've got a really interesting theory about why online dating is so brutal compared to when you meet people in person or through a friend.
Yeah, when you meet someone online, it's like meeting them in a bubble. The idea is you don't come with any prior warnings from friends or whatever. It's so you don't leave any trace if you leave it. So the idea is how you behave within that relationship, it doesn't have any repercussions mm-hmm. often. And so the way that you behave when you date someone, and you might be intimate with someone, you might be in a relationship for 3 months, but if you choose to be a complete tosser, there's no fallback. And so I believe that online dating is, it's not a good way for people to actually meet. It's what we have because technology has given us something that's wonderful, but it doesn't actually suit how we like to meet someone.
They don't have to be accountable for their actions.
They don't have to be accountable. And also when you meet them, you actually don't see what they're really like. Like if I'd met some of the people that I end up dating in a social environment and there may be 20 other people in the room, there's no way I would have dated them because they're social. We wouldn't have gelled. Mm-hmm. But then because you actually are just sitting across the room from someone and they're trying the hardest and you're trying the hardest, you're getting the kind of a very weird, unreal vibe. And it's only after a couple of months when you actually meet their friends that you see them in the social environment that if you'd met them normally would have been your first encounter. And then by then you've slept with them, mm-hmm. you're planning a holiday, and then you kind of forget her. You kind of make excuses.
But it's kind of exciting when there's a bunch of people swiping on you or you're getting lots of likes, right?
When I went back online last time, I thought, I'm going to cut to the chase. I'm going to pay $20 to see how many people have swiped me because I'm only going to swipe those who swipe me because,
Yeah.
And there was over 1,000 that had swiped me.
What? That's fantastic.
Well, half of it is, oh my God. But it's not because I'm amazing. It's simply because there's so many people online looking for love. And, I was speaking to a friend yesterday. He said he just swipes right. He never swipes left.
Well, he swipes right on every single person.
But a lot of it. So you just, and I went off straight away because it was just overwhelming. Because rather
than look through the 1,000, surely there must have been a few good ones in there.
Yeah, but they're not. It was just too much. It was like information overload because I expected, he's 60 or something or maybe 120 and so I can then do that winnowing. But when there's over 1,000 and it keeps on, counter keeps on going up and up.
Oh, look at you. No wonder you're taking a break from dating.
No, but I reckon if you did the same, you'd probably have 3,000, Sammy. it's just, you just think, my God, is that how it is right now? I'm scared.
For someone who's in a dating timeout, this has been fascinating. I could talk to you for another 3 hours. How long do you think your dating timeout might last?
Look, I'm meeting different people because I'm like changing my job and stuff. So I figure that there's more likely because I'm meeting more people that organic chance to meet someone is going to happen this year. And if it doesn't, then that's fine. And then I'll probably get harder core into online dating again.
You're putting yourself out there. And
yeah, I'm changing my dating. I'm just coming in contact with more people organically than I was before. So I figure that
when it happens, it happens.
Yeah, it happens. And will I put more energy into online dating? You know, I think there's points when you think it's time. And yeah. I think when the coronavirus is right now, I don't think it's necessarily time to go and kiss a lot of people.
It's really, really limiting our passion dash ratio, isn't it?
I mean, I think we're going to have like plastic lip covers.
That's a good thing to think about. Well, good luck with that. Good luck with your strategy. And we should check in with you a bit down the track and see how that strategy worked for you. I'm fascinated to know. Thanks for your time. I hope you find what you're looking for, Wendy.
Thanks, Sammy.
Romantically Challenged was presented by me, Sammy Lucas, in collaboration with Podcast One Australia. Sound production was by Matt Nikolic and the executive producer is Jenny Goggin. For more episodes, go to podcastone.com.au, download the Podcast One app, or look me up on iTunes.